Welcome to Risk Ready, presented by the Private Risk Management Association.
Welcome, everyone. This is Spencer Holden, the host of Insurance Thought Leader podcast, a Private Risk Management Association production. Today, we have the pleasure of hosting Lacey Garrison-Strom. Lacey is the Executive Vice President and Director of Family Office for Heffernan Insurance Brokers. She's more than 20 years of experience and currently leads the Family Office and Private Client teams at Heffernan. Known her for a long time. She specializes in personal insurance risk management consulting for successful families and family offices, both here in the U.S. and internationally. Always enjoyed my conversations with Lacey. She's a thought leader, especially grateful for the hints she's given me regarding the California marketplace and how to navigate it, considering I'm from the Northeast. But she and I have something in common, which I do want to touch on today, and that's how we form strong relationships with carriers and underwriters. She's also a fellow geek of the industry, really taking pride in being a student of the industry and its mechanics. You know, one of the powers of PRMA is the opportunity to interact with successful brokers in our space, and Lacey certainly fulfills that title of being a successful broker. I love the summit for the programming, but I really love the summit for the hallway and the people that I can meet and interact with in that hallway and learn from. And that's where I first met Lacey. So Lacey, thanks for allowing us to tap your brain today.
Of course. Thanks for inviting me.
So I mentioned in that opening about carrier and underwriter relationships, and you and I have had conversations about this in the past. We value our relationships with underwriters, but not everybody does when you speak to underwriters. So other people take different approaches. Can you talk a little bit about your approach and how you feel its importance is to successful collaboration and best outcome for your clients?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm often kind of shocked about, you know, others' approach to developing relationships, or maybe they just don't even think that they should develop relationships with their underwriters. It's a more of they tell their underwriter what they need them to do. And I do not operate that way, neither do you. You know, leading with kindness always, I think, is incredibly important in general in life. But especially when you're trying to develop a relationship with an underwriter who, you know, is typically, you know, often thinking that you are maybe not giving them the entire truth, right? So developing a relationship is really important. Making sure that they have clean submissions, that you're being very transparent. Don't let them find out about something negative that they might find out on their own that's not from you. You know, I mean, so I always just, I paint the picture, the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between. And I think they really appreciate that. They appreciate that honesty. You know, also just like being reasonable about turnaround times. You know, if you send something into them and then you're expecting like a 48-hour turnaround time, that's just not going to happen in this market. So making sure that you have a reasonable turnaround time. In this hard market, outlining subjectivities in advance is really helpful. You know, like, hey, look, just throw the kitchen sink at it. Like, what can we do to get from a no to a yes? And kind of helping them underwrite a little bit, like they're basically pre-underwriting the risk for them to help them get to a yes when maybe initially they might just go straight to a no. And honestly, most of my underwriters, they've become really great friends because of all of these things. You know, I talk to my underwriters more than I talk to my own family or even my long-term friends that I've known since I was little. And we've just developed really deep, close friendships. And most of the time, your underwriters, you know, are going to be an underwriter somewhere else, right? And hopefully you still get to have that relationship with them. And so I often will do things outside of work with my underwriters as well, you know, remembering their birthdays, their kids' birthdays, when they get married, you know, their anniversary dates, all the same things I do with my friends and my family.
And I know you mean that it's a genuine relationship, and it is. And I love your comment about you speak to them more than your family. It is true. At my wedding, which was almost 30 years ago, but my underwriter from Chubb was at my wedding, and I've been to underwriters' weddings. I mean, they do become important people. But I learned this business from my father, and he taught me early on that we really are the upfront underwriters. I mean, we know the house, whether it's in good shape in your local community. We know the character of the people. And I agree with you. It's important to build that trust with the underwriters. And so we're going to call that Lacey's secret sauce number one. Develop okay. relationships and be nice to your underwriters, because we're all in this together to do a good job for the end client. You know, one the other thing we've talked about a lot is that you are a student of the industry. And I think you'd agree with me that even if you love the mechanics of the industry, you know, it's not just a hobby, it's really important to be successful. And so maybe you can talk a little bit about why you think understanding the industry and the dynamics of it are so important to properly advising your clients.
Well, I've just always been curious by nature, right? And I love risk management. I love what we do for our clients. And I think we cannot properly explain what's going on in our industry if we don't understand it ourselves. And our clients, it's not their job to understand it, right? And so the more we understand what is going on with our industry, to your point, the mechanics of maybe how a policy works, why it works that way, why it was written, this contract was written in a specific way, why capacity might be challenging where they live, the better we're going to be able to explain it to them in a simplified way, right? So I'm always curious. Like, I follow industry publications. PRMA is an incredible resource and a tool that we often will use. We often take information off your website and reformat it into our own words. But just making sure that you're also not just focusing on maybe personal insurance, but also be curious about commercial PNC and benefits and life insurance and how that all functions and how that can help for your family offices, because it is a part of the overall risk management. And I think sometimes we're so focused on personal lines, we may forget that we need to ask other questions surrounding their, you know, their corporate life, their foundations, their family, the things that they're really worried about. And being a part of PNC meetings and getting invited to commercial meetings and benefits meetings, but also inviting them to mine, has really taught me a lot. So my own colleagues teach me every day. So that's the basic, my second secret sauce, I guess.
And you once told me there's one thing you do when you first wake up in the morning. Do you remember mm-hmm. that?
Yes. The first thing I do is I listen to a podcast and I read my LinkedIn. I don't remember which order I went in with it, but it's generally speaking LinkedIn, and then I'm following, and then a podcast or vice versa.
And Insurance Journal.
Insurance Journal is one of the places I go on LinkedIn.
Yeah, because
I follow them.
Tons of stuff that happens mm-hmm. overnight. I think that's mm-hmm. A great resource. And I think it's not even insurance. It's to understand what's going on in the economy, what's going on with construction costs, the art world.
Absolutely.
But don't forget to eat a banana every morning, because there's good on potassium. Podcast.
Yeah, you've got to eat the banana.
Yeah. What are your favorite podcasts?
My favorite, oh gosh, I have so many. We talked about this too. Like, I'm definitely a podcast geek. So let's see. The first one I listen to in the morning is Up First, which is just like a really great snippet to your point of like, what's going on in the world? What do I need to know about? Because I've just found watching the news is depressing, you know, so I choose to listen to it or read it. The Daily is another really great podcast that I listen to. I think you do too.
Yes.
And again, like a really great, like, this is what you need to know about, like, here's a general topic that's important. And then the last, I want to say 5 minutes of that podcast is just an overview of what's going on in the country and in the world. I like NPR News. I kind of listen to that throughout the day. Cause I think it hits, if there's a new podcast, I want to say at the top of every hour or at the top of every 2 hours. So I listen to that throughout the day. Our clients are often interviewed on How I Built This, Wisdom from the Top, The Great Creators. That's all Guy Raz. and he's amazing interviewer. Armchair Expert is great. Like that. That's Dax Shepard. And then Smartless is my son, you know, entertaining. Like, I love Jason Bateman. So I've got a big crush on him.
We listen to a lot of the same podcasts. We're in School has a lot of great podcasts as well. And so, Diane, maybe we can put a couple of those on the web. And it would be fun if we could throw it out there and see what other people listen to. There's also a ton of insurance podcasts out there.
Yeah.
Diane's been on several of them as a guest, and there's some really good content out there. I agree with you. It's just something that you've got to stay up with what's going on in the world. All right. California, you know, you're going to get this. Born and raised in Connecticut. Most of my business is in the Northeast, but I do have sprinkles all around the country and certainly plenty in California. We cringe when a client comes and says they're buying something in Beverly Hills. And I always tell my team, I have for a few years now, how would you like to be that poor broker that's California-based that deals with this every day? Well, here she is. It's Lacey. She deals with it every day. So pens and paper out. Tell us about navigating the California market and some of the things that you do to place cover, find cover, and capacity for your clients.
You know, a lot of it is very similar to what we did to develop relationships in the admitted world, right? But now we're focusing on the E&S side. And just, it's our new normal. You know, we admitted is probably going to completely go away in California in some areas. And so just making sure, again, like being curious, what new markets are out there, understanding reinsurance. Right? Like, how does reinsurance function? How is that going to help California? Because we are in an election year, usually means interest rates are going to go down in an election year. That will have a great impact on reinsurance because people being mostly like actually family offices and venture capital, private equity are going to probably start deploying capital to our reinsurance markets. And so, you know, understanding which one of those markets might potentially deploy capital or give a better reinsurance renewal to a carrier that we are close with, like let's just say Private Client Select or Chubb Customs, or you know, hopefully they'll have some kind of softening of capacity. But also really understanding the tools that we have here. We're very lucky to have California Fair Plan, as much as we don't want to place business with the California Fair Plan. Other states don't have that option. You know, so you'll have really terrible wildfire areas and pockets of Colorado, Utah, Montana, Wyoming, and you're just, all you have is a very expensive E&S option. So we're constantly interviewing new carriers that are coming into the marketplace. In fact, we just onboarded 3 new markets just to test them out, see if it's going to work. A lot of these markets are just, they're dipping their toe in the water. You know, so they're like, oh, well, we'll go up to 3 million, maybe 5, maybe 10 in San Francisco. We're like, okay, so I'll take it. I mean, the fact that we're seeing an interest in California and we are seeing new markets coming in to California is good. That's really good. Talking to your broker friends is also really important. You know, just try, there's enough business for all of us. It's important to create friendships with your competitors because they often will know about a market that I don't. And I'll call, hey, I'm stuck on this. Like, where should I go? What should I do? And that's been really helpful too. You know, in fact, carriers too. You know, I've had phone calls with underwriters like, hey, I just heard about this market or this syndicate in London. Have you heard of them? And picking up the phone and trying to develop relationships with those E&S markets. And giving them a shot at the business and consistent business, because that's another thing that's tricky in California, is you're bringing on so many markets, but you're not actually feeding those markets, that will shut that option down for you. So I think making sure that if you bring on a market, that you're going to be able to send that business to them, and making sure your team knows too, like, okay, like we just brought on this market, let's, you know, 5 submissions here, 5 submissions there, 10 here, you know, making sure that your team really understands the mechanics of that relationship building that often like the leaders of the division are developing, but the team needs to also understand the importance of that. But I do think it's going to get better. I mean, it's already getting better. All the other California brokers listening to this are going to scream at me now, but it is getting better. It's certainly not as bad as it was 2 years ago. We've had some pretty mellow wildfire seasons, not so mellow winter storms. You know, the atmospheric rivers that California has experienced the last couple of winters have not helped us, but again, we do then have the water, right? So that's good. So we're not in a drought, which is good news with our market. So again, they're testing the waters. I'm seeing more and more yeses in the wine country and in Carmel and in areas of LA. So it's getting better.
There's a couple of key things in what you just said I'm going to bring out. Mm-hmm. One is don't be afraid to call all other brokers and ask for help. And that's certainly one of the themes that came out of the last summit was don't be afraid to ask for help. But ironically, I've had three interactions with competitors today, and I don't consider them competitors. They're just people that do the same thing I do. And it's you know, help on something, or can I bounce something off of you? And again, not to sound like a broken record, but one of the advantages of PRMA and the summit is to get to know people around the country. I'm a dummy when it comes to Louisiana, but I have a couple of brokers down there that help me when I need a placement. And the other thing I'd like to highlight is you mentioned we live in the E&S world now, certainly in California and in other parts of the country like Florida. We had David Levins from Amwins on as a guest several months ago, and he talked a lot about what you mentioned early on, which is develop that relationship with the underwriter, because they have 50 files on their desk, and they're gonna address the file that they want to address. And the other thing that he taught us that I didn't realize is the compensation structure of those E&S brokers. They are compensated for placement, and if you're practice quoting with them and you're making their life miserable, you're not going to get to the top of the pile like somebody who's supporting them and being upfront with them and helping them do their job successfully. So I think all of that was great. And I love to hear that the California marketplace, in your opinion, is getting better. I agree with that, certainly what I'm reading. I guess the question is, you know, will it ever be great again? I do think there's some risk mitigation that's going on with some of these houses. You know, we're thinking differently about building materials and stuff. But do you predict that in 3 years, it's still a very hard market in the state of California?
I predict it will soften. I think you're going to see our property market soften in probably the end of Q4 2024, beginning of Q1 2025. You'll see a softening in property, but it's a trade-off. So where we're seeing a softening in property, we're seeing a hardening in casualty and profile issues because of nuclear judgments. You know, $10 million plus jury awards, you know, tort reform is necessary. We're just not even close to it, especially in California. And then we're also seeing a hardening in our auto markets, which I know you are all domestically, we're all seeing increases in auto. So to answer your question, will it ever be great again? It's never going to be like how it was. I mean, you just sort of have to accept that and move on, but it is going to get easier. But it's also a political position, our Department of Insurance, you know, so it really also depends on who gets elected the next go around. And I think we've got three more years with our current insurance commissioner. You know, so I think we're going to see consistent challenges in California. But I think if the carriers can develop their E&S side, like especially middle market carriers, you know, Travelers, Safeco, or Liberty, Nationwide, like if they can develop these E&S sides the way Chubb and Pure and AIG have and Cincinnati, I think that will go a long way to improving the marketplace.
We're going to wrap up here. I mentioned early on that you are a thought leader in the space, and I'm sure you have a lot of people, as I do, that are fairly new in the industry that are trying to tap into our brains and ask us questions about our success. I always say that best advice I can give is work hard and be responsive to your clients. I mean, like, how'd you do? I'm like, I worked my butt off. That's how I did it. But but a lot of new brokers trying to get into the space, either new in the industry or new in our space, are listening to this podcast. So what advice could you give them to improve their chances for success?
Funny what you said, be responsive. Our number one Heffernan habit is pick up the phone, answer an email, and have a good time while you're doing it. Like, so be responsive, you know, be that cheerful voice on the end of the telephone, or, you know, in that meeting, in that email, and get back to people and make it clear that you care. Like, you really do care about what you're doing for them. And if you say you're going to get them something in a specific timeline, like, make sure you do, like, execute on it. Or if you can't, tell them that you're not going to be able to. Just really work hard, be responsive, and have fun while you're doing it. You know, try to not take it too seriously, because it's a hard market, but that just means that when it softens, you're going to be even better at what you do.
I'm curious, when you get a broker of record letter, what is a typical reason why they're leaving the other broker?
Because when I do the risk audit, I find so many problems with the program. It's almost like this set it and forget it mentality. I don't know if annual reviews are being made, if anyone's checking in those policies, but typically they're a mess. The programs are just a mess. And messy programs, as far as effective dates, are uncommon in a hard market. You know, so I'm not talking about just, you know, effective dates that aren't aligned. I'm talking about, like, endorsements missing, coverage that doesn't make sense, deductibles that are too low and don't make sense, underinsured homes, underinsured watch collections, art, you know, antique classic vehicles, exotics. I mean, that's usually why I get a BOR. Right. And they like me, I think.
And they like you. I see the same thing. But I also have a lot of, when the initial call, they're like, well, my other broker never gets back to me. I can't tell you how many times I hear that. The other broker never gets back to me. And you said one other important thing, and that's live up to your promises. And we talk a lot at our firm about setting expectations. You know, just tell them it's going to take a week to get a quote, and then they're not going to be calling you every day. You know, and tell them that for you to do your proper job and negotiate with underwriters, you need a full week to market it. But set the expectation. And I think we do a lousy job in the industry of doing that. So,
yeah. Oh, and I think we're just so used to it being the way it was. Remember when we started and we would have 6 beautiful options in like 48 hours?
Right.
Oh, I mean, it's like we want to think it's going to take less than a week, but
it is true.
No more. Yeah. True. Oh, those were the days.
Those were Lacey Garrison Strong, Executive Vice President, Director of Family Office for Heffernan Insurance Brokers. Thanks for sharing your insight with us today and being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for the Risk Ready podcast. We encourage you to subscribe, download, and review our podcast. Until the next time, stay risk ready.